Crystal Lake, Mr. Gekas.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I represent the appellate landowners who have some property that is in and then a section of it contiguous to the city of Crystal Lake. And it's next door to water waste treatment and storm water retention facilities. And due to some construction, some in the late 60s and some in the middle of the 90s, their property has been intermittently inundated with stormwater, and therefore the value of it has been substantially diminished because a good portion of it, about two-thirds of it, perhaps a little bit less, have been converted to wetlands.
Mr. Gekas, are you aware of any Illinois case that has considered the transformation of property from non-wetland to wetland, from sort of agricultural lands, I gather this was? Wetland is a term of art, right? It's a particular kind of land with a certain amount of water saturation, and there's some things you can do with it, and there are environmental protections at the state and federal level, et cetera.
Right.
So my question is whether there is, in fact, any case that has looked at what I'll call the permanent transformation of certain land from ordinary land to wetland.
Well, the answer to that question directly is yes, we think it's the Luperini case, but the context of your question is...
You're hitting yourself in the foot by overreading these Illinois cases. Luperini, you could easily win under Luperini. Luperini points out, interestingly, following up on what Judge Wood was saying, that an undefined portion of the property was previously classified as jurisdictional wetlands. In other words, what were they complaining about if the land was already wetlands? Well, the implication is if you convert something to wetlands, then maybe you've got a case. So I don't know why you keep arguing against yourself.
Well, that's
when you go into Illinois court, you know, the other side will say, well, you know, they conceded, but they have no case.
Well, Your Honor, if you're going to send us back to Illinois court, I think what Your Honor has just said is going to provide me with the escape valve that I need. I think the direct answer to
the Illinois court has never precisely had your case, but the Supreme Court, for reasons best known to itself, you know, in this line of cases, including Williamson, including the more recent cases, has said you've got to find out whether the state system as a whole, including the state courts, is prepared to give you compensation for the thing that happened. And maybe there is a futility exception, but Judge Moran didn't think that your case was so hopeless as to fall into the futility exception. That doesn't mean, you know, you had a slam dunk winner, but it does mean that you've got to ask.
Well, we did ask, and we asked the state court.
Not at the appellate court level. You didn't take any appeal.
Well, the question is whether
that's where you change the law. I mean, you know, that it's the appellate court level where the Illinois courts would be empowered to say, well, we've had this situation before, we've had that situation before, now we have a wholesale transformation to wetland. How are we going to read Luperini? How are we going to read other cases?
Well, the first question you asked is whether or not there's a case in Illinois regarding wetlands and its characterization.
And the kind of transformation that you allege has happened here. And I didn't see one that was this wholesale transformation. And I gather, aside from Luperini, you haven't seen one either.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Secondarily, it may not be a record in this case, but in the state court case, the question of the transformation of the property from classified wetlands to unclassified wetlands is, in fact, what happened in this case because of the Supreme Court decision in the sanitary district case having to do with whether the Corps of Engineers has jurisdiction over non-contiguous wetlands that are non-contiguous to flowing water. It's not a record in this case, but the result of that case was to essentially be the same as Luperini. It became unclassified wetlands. I would suggest to the court that if I am wrong in shooting myself in the foot by making the argument, as I do on the bottom of page 13, that the matter is not even remotely debatable, that there has to be permanent inundation, and that both I and the circuit court judge are incorrect about that, I hope that the rulings that Your Honor make will state that affirmatively, because one of the problems that we've looked at in this case is the problem of taking an appeal in a case where the circuit court and also and now us say that the law is well established. And if we're reading it wrongly, and you think we're reading it wrongly, and if Judge Moran is right that inundation is in fact a matter of degree, and there's enough of a wiggle room for you perhaps to persuade the second district where Luperini came from to change its mind and to say that making the property wet all the time is sufficient, or perhaps even to change the law. Maybe.
But Judge Moran more or less said all of it. I mean, it's not up to us to tell the state courts what to do. It's certainly possible, as Judge Moran has already done, to say, you know, this reasonable arguments can be made on both sides of this point.
Well, it comes down, I think, as he says, to the question of degree. And inundation means inundation. And Luperini says...
By what, a millimeter? I mean, that's what I'm not sure of.
Essentially, if you read the excerpt from Luperini that I have on page 13, it has to do with the temporal nature of the inundation. And inundation means inundation. If an earthen dam breaks and 50 billion gallons of water wash away a town and sit there for a week or two, that's an inundation. When the water recedes...
See, the stronger your case, the likelier it is that the Illinois courts will go along with you.
Well, I think if you look at the circuit court's opinion, which is included, of course, in the appendix, he characterizes the result as being harsh. And so if we look at this thing...
Yes, but of course, as a trial court, as a trial judge, he can't change the law. He may feel he's much more constrained than the appellate court or the Supreme Court of Illinois of the Supreme Court. So,
well, when a circuit court tells us that the law is clear, even though harsh, what is the obligation of the advocate? It seems to me that, of course, there's room to take an appeal and to urge the alteration of the law. But the problem is that the way we look at this permanent inundation and the temporal scope limitation of the takings law in the courts of Illinois, it looks to us to be fairly well established.
But those are two different things. I mean, as I understand your presentation of these facts, there's nothing temporal about what's happened to your client's lands. They are now and forever wetlands at this point because of, it's not like they're wetlands 6 months of the year and they're dry as a bone the other 6 months, is it?
Well, the answer to that question requires me to go outside the record.
Well, never mind then, but I understood you to be saying these are now wetlands.
That's
so
right.
There is at least... that takes the temporal aspect off the table.
We think
not. And then
not.
You have to have the transformation question.
Go
ahead.
We think not, because it's clear that what they're talking about is the temporal nature of the inundation. The fact of the matter is what we debated in the circuit court, and I think it comes through in Judge Sullivan's written opinion and some of his quotations, is we debated the question of whether or not they're standing water. And does it have to be a millimeter? Does it have to be, fathoms in the nautical way? The question is that kind of a degree is essentially irrelevant. There has to be standing water. And that is what he said, and we read the case law as saying in Illinois is required. And so it's a very peculiar position to be in. Section of our brief spits out all of the scholarly articles that have been critical of the Williamson Doctrine. What Williamson...
Well, about which we, of course, can do nothing.
Well, that's right. But, and of course, I understand that. If there is going to be an affirmance here, my father used to ask the courts where he practiced for an affirmance with reluctance. And then the court will explain why it is reluctant to do that. And so it's essentially a peculiar position to be in. If you read the law differently than the circuit court and I do, I hope you'll say that Judge Moran was right, and here's the reason why.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gikas. Mr. Norton?
May it please the court, John Norton on behalf of the City of Crystal Lake. I guess Mr. Gekas and I can agree that we'd both ask you to say that Judge Moran was right. I think Judge Moran was right. I think that his opinion was very well considered.
What remedy do they have left since they didn't appeal, plaintiffs?
Well, the order in the case is still pending in the Circuit Court of McHenry County as to the claim for injunctive relief and as to the claim against the railroad, and the order of summary judgment appears to be interlocutory in nature. We're still fighting this case in McHenry County as well.
It was interlocutory, but they could have appealed.
They could have appealed. They chose not.
Can they appeal at the end of the case and raise the same issues again?
It would be an alternative, Your Honor. Yeah. But certainly, Judge, to be brief and not to belabor the point, there's no exception here to the Williamson County exhaustion requirement.
Would you agree that there is a futility exception, though? Do you think it doesn't matter how pointless it is, you still have to appeal?
I think there's a futility exception. I believe the futility exception, Your Honor, is based on a lack of a system or a procedure, as in the Daniels case, by which the plaintiffs can go forward. I think.
Well, what if Illinois had a doctrine under the state constitution that said temporary takings are not eligible for just compensation? And, of course, under the federal constitution, that's not the law. The Fifth Amendment is very clear that if the government takes your property temporarily, it has an obligation to compensate you for it. There are a lot of World War II cases where they took people's boats and so on. So it's very clear. So if state law just makes it not a compensable event as a matter of law, and yet under federal law it would be, what's the proper step for a person in this position to take, the wrong sense position?
I believe we'd be in the same situation as the court was in Daniels, where they didn't even seek redress in the state court but immediately filed a federal proceeding. I think if there's legislation that denies a procedure or system to get redress in a situation like that, we have
futility. What if it isn't legislation? Are there any situations in which common law doctrine is so firmly established that there would be no point in trying to get it changed by the state Supreme Court?
We've been unable to find any cases where there was such entrenched common law doctrine, and I think going back to the SGB case with which this court is familiar, it becomes a question of routing cases into the federal court. As the court there said, you can't declare a futility ex ante by virtue of previous case law. And I think, as Judge Moran pointed out in his ruling, not that he was trying to be abundantly helpful to the plaintiffs in this case, but he pointed out various aspects of seeking appellate review of this particular ruling, even in light of the Luperini and the Pratt line of cases in Illinois, where he felt that the appellate court could revisit the question, as this court pointed out in argument here today, as to the nature and degree of inundation. You know, we're dealing with a very inexact term here, quote, inundation, unquote. What does it mean? How does it manifest itself? Especially the Pratt case goes back to the 60s, and with the development of wetlands law over the last 40 years, whether or not land being put into a wetland designation and how that might impact on the Luperini and Pratt line of cases in Illinois. So I think that to answer your question, I haven't found any cases where the precedential law is so well entrenched that it becomes futile. I think the cases that have addressed futility relate to a scheme where a state either prohibits recovery or in Daniels where it doesn't give any venue for recovery of a remedy that is sought, especially in an inverse condemnation situation. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Norton. Mr. Gekas, I think, has a minute left. It's about, yeah.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Think further you'd like to say?
Yes, I'd like to make 2 points. I think, first of all, part of the question is how well established does the law have to be? Does someone in my client's position have to?
You know, it's really a lot simpler is to say we're not going to get into that. We're just going to say, well, it's one thing if it's a statute that, you know, says no injunctions or no damages or what have you. But if it's just a common law, we'll just have a flat rule which says you have to.
You have to appeal.
That makes sense.
It seems to me that may be necessarily.
Otherwise, you get into this very awkward thing. I mean, you see, what makes this very unsatisfactory from your standpoint is that in order to try to bring yourself within the futility exception, you end up arguing against yourself. And then that can be an embarrassment when you go back if you lose on the futility. That would be the argument for.
And the other side of the coin was when we were trying to figure out what to do in the state court, whether or not it was legitimate for us to make an argument that inverse condemnation applies. This really is a catch-22. The other thing, Your Honor, if I may, yes. one other thing. Early in the process of appeal, we filed a motion for expedited argument and consideration. The case, for a variety of reasons, wasn't scheduled until today. For a variety of reasons that I hope are apparent, we ask that to the extent that you're able that you make a disposition of this case as quickly as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you to both counsel. Okay.